basically means I simply introduce people and you'll listen to everything they have to say. There's a wide variety of subject matter here, so hopefully there is something for everybody. The title of today's workshop, or this workshop, is I Am Not Alone, Bulimia, Anorexia, Allergies, Vegan, Exercise, Pregnancy, Lactation, and Diabetes. Now, we don't have Vegan with us today, so that subject will not be covered except as it may be incidental to other folks and what they say. There's a couple of real quick ground rules. If you speak in the mic, and everything said here is being recorded, the idea is that it'll be put together with the other workshops so people can listen to it and gain from your experience, strength, and hope, that we need you to sign before you talk on this permission sheet so that it can be recorded and that other people can listen to it later on. So again, if you want to ask a live question, and we'll have questions after every panelist has spoken, just come on up, grab the mic. It stretches a good distance out here, so there's enough room. And before you do, just sign in the sign-in sheet. The other possibility is if you don't want to sign, ask a live question. We have sheets of paper here. And these pieces of paper and the pens, which I'll pass out, if anybody wants to ask a question, just put it right there on the end of the aisle, and I'll read it out, or somebody else will read it out, in which case, obviously, it's an anonymous question, and you don't have to sign in. Now, without any further ado, I'd like to introduce the first of our panelists, and this is Joanne S., and Joanne S. is speaking on the subject of bulimia and anorexia. Joanne S. came into the program in 1999 in Southern California. With one slip in 2005, she has remained abstinent from compulsive eating since then. She has had the experience of journeying through recovery from compulsive eating, bulimia, and anorexia. She is now at maintenance weight, living in Michigan, happily married 42-plus years, and continues to work in recovery with a great medical team and the fellowship of See How. She's grateful to be here, and we're grateful that she's here as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Noel. I'm so glad that we're all here together and that we have an opportunity to, you know, stand up at a See How meeting, Compulsive Eaters Anonymous How meeting, as the different crowd, you know, the people with the special problems. And Bill had something to say about that from the big book, and I wanted to read that to you. Where did I put my big book? Right. On page 133, Bill says, God has abundantly supplied this world with fine doctors, psychologists, and practitioners of various kinds. Do not hesitate to take your health problems to such persons. Most of them give freely of themselves that their fellows may enjoy sound minds and bodies. Try to remember that though God has wrought miracles among us, we should never belittle a good doctor or psychiatrist. Their services are often indispensable in treating a newcomer and in following his case afterwards. So there we have it. We have that from the big book. We also have on page 18 and 19 in our wonderful Forever Abstinent book, a word about medical abstinence, because that's what we're talking about really today, is special circumstances that cause us to have a medical abstinence food plan. And also we have a wonderful pamphlet which lines out our view on medical abstinence and also indicates that no matter what, our medical food plan is going to be sugar-free, flour-free, and that is the non-negotiable item about our food plan and about coming here with a medical abstinence. And so I'm going to just tell you, I already told my story last night, but I'll just very briefly tell you what happened to me in terms of sponsorship. I came into Southern California and this program in 1999 as what I thought was an overweight woman. I did not like the size of my body. I wanted to lose weight, and I had made a constant effort my whole life of trying to get skinny and to be skinny. And I swore that I would never get fat. And so I came to Compulsive Eaters Anonymous how, after suffering with this not eating all day long in order to maintain the weight that I was at and not get any worse, so that I could binge eat all night. And I don't mean all night. I meant until I fell asleep at night. So I came here in 1999 and got a sponsor for the first 30 days, worked the steps, and worked the food plan exactly the way it's listed in our food plan, and lost approximately 17, 18 pounds in 30 days. Now, I had never lost that much weight, and I'd never been at that low a weight. Maybe there are anorexics and bulimics who are much thinner or much smaller than I was, but my lowest weight was 97 pounds, and I loved it. I thought it was the most fabulous place to be, and I did not want to give up that weight. I wanted to stay in double digits if possible, and I worked the program and the plan as well as I could to maintain that weight. And those first 30 days, it was easy to lose that weight for me. After the first 30 days, my sponsor had to part ways because I was now going to go on to the next phase, and she wasn't ready to have me as an inventory sponsor, so I switched sponsors. And I got a more experienced sponsor who looked at me and she said, if I'm going to sponsor you, I'm going to insist that you go on the maintenance food plan. That does not make you a maintenance sponsor. That means that you are going to be eating from the maintenance food plan because you're clearly at a low weight and I'm afraid that you are getting too low. She just said it right out. I was a little resistant, but, you know, I wanted to be part of this so bad that I agreed to do that. And I worked for me to have the three meals a day, weighed and measured, was a great progress for my recovery. Because up until this point, I was eating nothing during the day. I was just binge eating on junk food at night. So for me to have three weighed and measured and healthy meals was Valhalla. I thought I had arrived to abstinence. You know, this was just wonderful. And I was able to maintain that low weight for about 6 years. It was fantastic. I never felt better in my life, except that I was starting to wear out. My bones were getting weary. I had a stress fracture in my leg. I had a knee injury. I had lots and lots of dental problems. And I was really suffering from underweight, and the effects were inward. My skin was very bad. It was dry. My hair was brittle. And I ignored those signs. I didn't want to admit that those were signs about my diet and about not eating properly. In 2005, I got to the point where I was really getting concerned about myself. I did not feel well, and I chose to go to a nutritionist here in Southern California, put me an anorexic, and set me on a course of a medical food plan for the first time. I followed her food plan very reluctantly because anorexics do not like to take directions and they don't want to be told that they're too thin. They absolutely don't want to be told that. This is a disease of denial. And I agreed to gain the very minimum of weight that would put me over the range of being an anorexic. I said I'll go up 2 pounds over her range. So I went up to 112. And that doesn't mean that everybody that's 110 is an anorexic. That just means that for my build, my height, my history, that she felt that 110 was too low for me. So I went to with her, and I ate 5 meals a day. My sponsor at the time was just overjoyed that I was finally getting help for my problem. And I also had to switch sponsors one more time because my second sponsor moved out of town. My third sponsor was somebody here from Southern California who was happened to be a psychologist. I guess God put her in my life for a reason, because anorexia and bulimia and any eating disorder is actually a medical problem and not just a, I mean, it's not just a medical problem, it's a psychological problem. And she could see that I indeed was going to have some help psychologically. She encouraged me to go to therapy. I did go to therapy for about a year here, and I got all better. And in 2008, my husband and I moved back to Michigan, and the bottom fell out of my life. I guess God had the idea that I needed some really, really hard lessons, and he gave them to me. I got an extreme depression, so bad that I was suicidal. I met a woman who got me in contact with a team of doctors, and that was truly a God thing. You know, they just came out of the blue. A team that worked together. A doctor, a psychologist, and a medical, a registered dietitian. And those three people, those medical professionals, worked together with each other, and they took me on as their patient. I felt safe for the first time in my life, and I felt like I was going to be able to get well, and I was ready. I was totally, absolutely, 100% ready to be taken under their wings, and I was ready to do whatever I had to do. So much of sponsoring an anorexic and a bulimic is about their own willingness. And that's something that a sponsor can't give an anorexic or a bulimic, or anyone else for that matter. But we can't make them honest, open, and willing. And until that happens, all we can do really is to love them and to pray for them and to hope that somehow God will bring them to their knees and give them that gift of desperation that I was given. And I was given that gift of desperation, and I was given recovery. Not only those are things that helped me recover, but I also identified with some people that I heard on the bridge, phone bridge meeting lines that I had been forced to use since I had moved back to Michigan and lived in an area where there were no meetings. Up until that point at my live meetings, I had never run into anorexics. I hadn't run into anybody that declared themselves as an anorexic. So I wanted to be part of everybody else. I wanted to be like everyone else. It was very hard for me to say, I'm Joanne, I'm a compulsive eater, bulimer, you know. I would say bulimic, I would say bulimorexic, but I would never say anorexic because I didn't believe it. So anyway, I'm back in Michigan, I'm in recovery, and I work with a wonderful team. I'm still in recovery. One of my issues is my body image, and I'm working on that. But that's my defect that God has to take away from me. As far as sponsoring, I think sponsoring, what my sponsors have done that was so helpful is to support my medical team. They have tried to always make sure that I was doing what my medical doctor told me to do, to eat what was on my plan. I was told to give them a copy. They have the name of my doctors. They have the medical food plan in front of them, so they know exactly what I'm eating each day or what I'm allowed to eat or what I'm supposed to eat. And when I report my food, they can check that out and make sure I'm getting what I can. And my sponsor does it. If I leave a grain out, you know, sort of on purpose, she will catch me and say, I think you're supposed to have that grain. You better have it, you know. And I'm a sneak. I'm a liar and I'm a thief, and I will cheat whenever I can, if I can. So my sponsor keeps me on base. I'm not really that bad. I'm getting better. I'm getting more willing. But that's what addicts do. We don't tell the truth always. So my sponsor supports and really supports the medical food plan that I'm in. The other thing that she does is to love me. You know, my sponsor could never, ever talk me into getting me to do anything. She had to let me and let God bring me to my bottom. And I think as a sponsor, the most important thing I can do is to give spiritual nourishment, spiritual help, give the program away spiritually, and let the doctors and the medical professionals take care of the physical and the psychological parts of the disease. We're not capable. That's far beyond our expertise, nor do we have the responsibility to do that. If somebody comes in to see me today and wants me to sponsor them, I automatically say, I really want you to go to a doctor. I can't make them go to a doctor, but I can strongly suggest it, and I can keep needling them every once in a while. Have you seen your doctor? Did you make the appointment? Did you take your food plan to the doctor? Because I don't want the same thing to happen to them as what happened to me. I got by with things. I was able to lie. And today, I want to be able to love my sponsees into recovery and let God be the guide. So I guess that's about all I have to say. If you have any questions about this particular subject, I hope you'll read the article on the website, Bulimia and Anorexia. It was our July article. And there's a little bit there. And if somebody can't actually work with the CEHOW food plan, if there's a doctor that says that he will not work with no sugar, no flour, then I would suggest that person will have to find help elsewhere. And I'm sure there are other places where they can get support. There are many websites where there's support for anorexics and bulimics now also. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joanne. A brief word to those who've come in after we started. There are pieces of paper and pens scattered around, and there's even some, I think, on the table there. And if you don't want to ask the live question, but you prefer to write one down after the panel's completed, you can write it down, and I'll go around and pick them up and then have someone read them. Otherwise, if you do want to ask a live question afterwards, you do have to sign in here before you speak. The next speaker deals with the subject of allergies, and that is Claudia. Now, Claudia M. has been a member of CEHOW since January of 2003. With several years of abstinence, she ultimately left the rooms in 2006, but hit another rock bottom and came back in May of 2008. Having had a new spiritual awakening. Claudia is currently a food inventory and step sponsor. She has held several service positions from greeter to intergroup rep. On her spare time, Claudia loves to take early morning walks with her dog, Frida, exercise, the E word, go out with friends, and spend quality time with her niece, Luna. However, her ultimate passion is salsa dancing. She firmly believes movement is medicine for creating change in a person's physical, emotional, and mental states. That's a quote from Carol Welsh. And she plans to move every single day of her life. Thank you, Claudia.
Doesn't that sound like a dating site, thing? By the way, hi, I'm Claudia. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi.
Thank you for all being here and your support. I'm going to talk about a little bit about allergies. I came back a couple years ago. The reason being I ended up in the hospital in the emergency room thinking I was having a heart attack. And I collapsed at work and thought, this is it. This is really it. And, you know, in my mid-30s, I didn't think that was possible, but leaving the program, I had gained 100-plus pounds more. So I got to the, you know, they rushed me to the hospital, of course, first one in, hooked me up, and, oh, she's not having a heart attack. Okay, I'm still dying here. I feel like I'm dying. I can't breathe. I can't. And they said, well, you're having a panic attack. And I'm like, what the heck is that? Well, at that time, I was working full-time, going to school full-time, and had just ended a 5-year relationship. And I knew at that time that I needed to come back. My younger brother and my sister were there, and my younger brother, who's shy, you know, just kind of bent over close and said, do you think you need to go back to your program? And I thought, yes, you know. I don't know if people know, after having a panic attack, some people's reaction is you can't drive, extreme fear of leaving your home, things that were new to me. And it was very, very difficult. And they recommended a lot of things, and, you know, yes, go back to your program. And they gave me a list of what I couldn't have and what I could. Dealing with the anxiety, there were a lot of things I couldn't have. I couldn't have any diet stuff. Of course, any sugar, any flour, anything in the processed cans, nothing. So I'm thinking, oh, you're going to kill me. You're going to kill me. So I came back to program, and my food had to be adjusted. And for me, it was difficult. I thought, I have to go through no sugar and flour, and now you're telling me I can't have coffee. I can't have diet sodas. I can't have any of the sweeteners. I can't have anything that contained caffeine, anything that came in a can, vegetables. And I'm thinking, what am I going to do? This, I need a crutch. I need a crutch. I'm coming back. I'm crawling back into these rooms. Needless to say, I didn't want to have another panic attack. And I did exactly what they told me. I did what my sponsor told me. I did everything. And once I started doing that, yes, the physical part of it was losing the weight. I'm down 80 pounds, obviously still recovery. But I started feeling so much better just with the water. I was up early and just happy and perky, and my skin was better. I wasn't having headaches, things like that. My problems with my, you know, my stomach, I mean, everything was just so much better. And I get the question of, so what do you do? What do you do when you have those cravings? You know, it is an allergy, like the sugar and flour. Those things are an allergy for me. But, you know, the benefit is the physical recovery is I'm able to sleep better. I'm able to, it was just a complete transformation, and you wouldn't think of that. And I had to accept it. I had to accept it. So sometimes I hear people in this program, well, I can't have, you know, this sugary thing or this. And I'm like, well, I can't have all this. So, you know, you got it good. You got it good, you know. So, you know, it was a blessing. It was a blessing. And some of my sponsors actually now are off the sweeteners. You know, they're on the food plan. You know, if you can have them, if you're okay with them, that's fine. For me, the allergy is the physical part of it, and the allergy is I want more. Like 2 packets? No, can you put like 10? You know, at that time, probably the most difficult one was the coffee. And I was going to school, and you know, You know, that coffee place was probably my second home, and that was a tough one. But I had to surrender it. I literally would, at work, go to the restroom, get on my knees, and ask for help. And I would be crying, and I would be shaking, but this is what I had to do. This is what I had to do. This was life or death. Do you want to end up back in the hospital? Do you want to be miserable? Do you want this? It's there. You know? And I had to take it to the effect that as the sugar and flour, I've had all the diet stuff. I've had all the caffeine. I've had it. It was a new spiritual awakening. I was able to move forward because of my higher power. And the blessings after that, because I let go of those crutches, the gum, all of that stuff that really, for me, was nutritionally not good. I filled myself with my higher power. Within, 6-9 months coming into program, emotionally, physically, it was just a miracle that I was fine going back to work. I moved out of my parents' home and bought my home, living alone. And I was like, it was God. It was God. You know, I had to go through this to get where I was. You know, today, it doesn't call me. You know, it's part of my recovery. You know, even though the food plan says I can have it, I can't have it. I don't need it. It's an allergy, and I don't need it. But what I do need is my higher power, the fellowship, my sponsor, and to be in these rooms, because I will die. I will die physically. Emotionally, I'm a wreck. But you know, and spiritually, you know, forget it. So today I'm able to live in the now, and I'm able to deal with things following structure and following my higher power, and that way I can go ahead and live in the real world and participate. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Claudia. Our next speaker is going to speak on the subject of exercise. It's Shannon H. Shannon has been absent since January 13th, 2003. She is maintaining a 100-pound weight loss and is the current chairperson of the World Service Sponsorship Committee. Thank you, Shannon.
You know what? I actually would like to get up. Yeah. My name is Shannon. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Shannon.
This is such a privilege to be on this panel with such lovely ladies. I wish that everybody who's listening to the recording could be here and see the beauty and recovery of the ladies on our panel today. And thank you so much, Anne, for asking me to be a part of this. Just to qualify, I've been abstaining since January 13, 2003. I'm a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor, and I'm currently maintaining an over 100-pound weight loss. And I have the fat pictures to prove it, so I'm going to pass those around. And for the people listening to this recording, I'm sorry you're not going to sorry that you're going to miss this experience. And I'm here today to talk to you about exercise. Just to tell you just a little bit about my story is I am a compulsive eater who was overweight all of her life. I was never at any kind of a normal weight, even as a child. I was always overweight. I was put on my first diet when I was 4 years old. This was back in the 70s, so that was how they dealt with kids that were overweight, as they put them on a diet. I know that diet did not help me lose weight, but what it did teach me to do was to become a sneak eater. And I just followed the pattern of sneaking my eating one way in front of the crowd and then sneaking in, binging behind closed doors, and that was a pattern that followed me my entire life until I got abstinent in 2003. This is the only time in my life that I have been an honest eater. You know, how I eat in front of you is how I'm eating at home, and everything is weighed and measured, and this is the first time I've ever had guilt-free eating. I can basically sum up my philosophy about exercise in what was already so beautifully shared this morning when Claudia put down the quote, movement as medicine. That was just absolutely perfect way to put that, to say that. So thank you for bringing that quote to us today. There's so many negative connotations about exercise because so many of us have abused it. We've been exercise bulimics. We have used it to burn off the calories that we're eating. We have used it to torture ourselves. And I'm here to let you know that I have found a way to not only make peace with exercise, love exercise, but to have it be a healthy tool in my recovery. Like I said, I was overweight all of my life, and I would exercise kind of in tandem with what I was doing with my eating, meaning if I was on a diet, I was exercising, and if I was binging, I was not exercising. And my pattern was like the binge-starve pattern, you know, and that included my exercise, so there was no consistency with it. And when I got abstinent in 2003, I decided that I wanted to exercise. And I wanted to do it because I love to do it. I believed in doing it. And I knew that it was something that was healthy and good for my body. And I also knew realistically that I had a lot of weight to lose. I had 100 pounds to lose. And that exercise was going to be something that would heal all of that damage. You know, I heard so much this weekend about, oh, I've lost so much weight, I have all of this loose skin, and I hate my body and my knees and the underarm, and exercise can heal a lot of that. I don't want to say it's the magic cure, but it is a very powerful tool that can help us to revitalize our bodies. And what I started doing was I started to walk. At 230 pounds, I was so heavy that I would walk across the room and my ankles would hurt. And I slept all the time, because I was so heavy that I was tired. And I would binge on huge amounts of sugar and then I would sleep. And that was what I did when I was compulsively eating. So now I'm not compulsively eating and I've got a little more energy to spend, but I'm still very heavy. So I just started to walk. And every day after work, I would come home, I would put on my headphones, and I would walk as far as I could. So maybe when I was starting out, I would do about 20 minutes or so. And then I would, trudge back to my apartment, have a cigarette, and I was smoking at the time. But I did it consistently. And pretty soon I was able to walk farther, and I was able to walk a little bit faster. And then my walks went from like 20 minutes to 30 minutes to an hour. And then pretty soon, walking got too easy, so I bought ankle weights. So I just went to Kmart or something and got some ankle weights, and I put them on. And then I started to build muscle by walking with these ankle weights. And then as I got fitter, I had more energy and more muscular strength and more endurance. And then walking became kind of boring. So I decided I was going to try some exercise videos. So there's a plethora of exercise videos. I'm a big fan of them. I still do them today. And I just found some exercise videos, and so I would work out in my apartment. And when the video people were doing jumping jacks, I was still so heavy that it was uncomfortable for me to physically jump around, so I would just modify with some low impact moves. But the key is that I just kept moving, and I did it consistently. And I heard somebody say one time, the key to exercise is to do it, and to do it often, and to do it consistently. And that's what I did. Today, I've been abstinent for 7.5 years, and I do amazing things that I never thought that I could do. My routine right now is I'm one of those people that I get up at 5 a.m. and I'm at the gym from 6 to 7, and I'm doing things like taking the spinning classes, I lift weights, I do yoga. I lift weights with my husband on Sundays. That's like our little ritual. And just the miracle in that, of somebody whose ankles hurt walking across her apartment at the time I was 33 years old, to being the person in the front of the room doing a spin class and then working all day and going to a meeting and having that kind of energy is really, really amazing. So that is how my exercise has progressed. And I just wanted to share about what I do physically. And now I want to talk about how I do the food with exercise, because I know that that is very anxiety-producing to people, is how can I do this food plan and still exercise. Right now I am on a medical abstinence. I worked extensively with a nutritionist last year, so I've been working with her for about a year. Before that, I did, you know, the health food plan as it was written, and so I've only been having a medical abstinence for about a year now, and I can absolutely tell you that I was able to do our food plan and exercise and have energy to spare. I hear people talk very much about how our food plan is rigid and constrictive and not flexible, and I was like, they are not doing the same food plan that I'm doing, because I had lots and lots of flexibility and was able to adjust it to accommodate my activity level. And I need to mention some specific foods, and I apologize for that. Normally I don't, but it's for kind of educational purposes, I suppose. I don't know if I exercised in my first 30 days. I'm thinking that I probably did not. I honestly just don't remember. I probably didn't, because the first 30 days are such a detox that just trying to get through the day was enough. But shortly thereafter, I did. And for me, hunger was the enemy. It was very important to me that I not be hungry. So at the time, I was going to school, and I was working, and I was working out in the mornings. And it was important to me that I had enough sustenance to get me through the day and to get me through the day comfortably. And so what I learned to do was to adjust my food to what I was going to be doing activity-wise that day. So I knew that, let's say I wanted to run that day. I knew that if I had a half a cup of cottage cheese in the morning, I was going to be starving by 9 o'clock. And so I learned how to do things like to find the food that would give me the most sustenance. Like a cup of beans is going to give me a lot more energy than a cup of yogurt. Or a cup of lettuce is going to be much lighter than a cup of squash. So that was how I learned how to, adjust my food within the limits of the food plan and still have the energy to exercise. And, this has all been a real trial and error for me. You know, as I lost weight, as I was getting down towards my goal weight, for some reason my metabolism, jacked up. And I became like this fat-burning machine. I didn't intend to, so my goal weight kind of came and went, and I couldn't stop losing weight, and that was very scary for me. So what I did is I just worked with a sponsor, and I kept adding food and, adding food until I maintained. But that was very frightening, because people would look at me and say, you're too thin, you must be getting anorexic, and I was too thin, and I was concerned that I was becoming anorexic. But I think at the time I just did not know how to balance out my food plan with my exercise, so it was all just very trial and error for me, and working with a sponsor and being very honest about what I was eating, being honest about my activity levels. Through my physical recovery, the exercise has brought so much to my life. It has been, to this day, one of the greatest ways that I have to manage stress. I am in a stressful job. After my workouts in the morning, I come into work and I am happy. I don't implode like I see a lot of my coworkers. I've been able to heal a lot of the damage from the huge weight gains and weight losses that I experienced. It's just fun. There's a lot of companionship, camaraderie at the gym. It's just been something that I look forward to doing, that I want to do. I feel very strong physically, and it's taught me even life lessons. I'm halfway through my spin class, and I think I can't go on another minute, and I do it just a minute at a time, and I've learned how to tolerate discomfort and keep moving, and I've learned how to continue going, get myself out of bed even when I don't want to. So I've learned delayed gratification, And you know, one thing that I don't particularly like doing, but I do it because it's good for my body, is lifting weights. So I, you know, it teaches me discipline. This is something that I don't particularly enjoy, but I know that it's good for me, and so I do it. And you know, all of these lessons I learned exercising have kind of translated into my life. Like, I show up to work even when I don't feel like it. I do tasks at work that I don't like, but I know that they're good for me and good for the company. So it's been not just brought me not only physical benefits, but it's brought me like emotional benefits as well. As a sponsor, I do not push exercise at all on my sponsees, at all. It is completely up to them, absolutely up to them. They know that I do. I'm very open. If they want to talk about it, we can talk about it. I encourage them to maybe walk. If they bring it up, I don't bring it up to them because it's an outside issue. If I had my way, like, an exercise would be our eighth tool, but it's not. So it's an outside issue, and I don't push it on them. You know, one thing that I did want to bring up in just a few minutes, I see Joanne has her forever abstinent food plan. Last year, I had the great opportunity to do the Avon Breast Cancer Walk, which was walking 43 miles, and I was working with my nutritionist at the time, and she put together a food plan for me that would enable me to train and to sustain my weight so that I wouldn't get too low, and be able to have the endurance, because it's like literally you're walking for 12 hours. So I just wanted to share that with you, that yes, you can do things like that in this program, you know, run marathons or walk 43 miles and raise money, you know, whatever you want to do, it is possible. But in working with the nutritionist, you know, my food is always my responsibility. So I have never done anything with my nutritionist that was outside of the tenets of this food plan. Everything is weighed and measured. Everything is sugar-free and flour-free. On page 13 in the food plan, it talks about food. We must empower ourselves. Our food is our responsibility, and we cannot, not finding it, but we cannot put our abstinence and make somebody else responsible for our abstinence. And that was one thing I just wanted to pass on. You know, if she had told me, Shannon, before your walk, you need to have, you know, 3 tablespoons of white flour and sugar, I would have said no. You know, that is outside of the realm of what's possible, of what our program tells us to do. So everything has been consistent with what we learn here. And I just, you know, I have been able to have physical recovery beyond what I thought was possible, and I feel wonderful. I feel wonderful. I have energy, and if anybody is interested in exercise, or you find it anxiety producing, if anybody can have a new experience with it, if I can have a new experience with exercise, then anybody can. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Shannon. The next speaker is going to speak on the subject of pregnancy and lactation. Gabby has been in the program and absent by the grace of God since September 29, 1997. She has, in the last 12 plus years, dated, remet the man who became her husband, I knew her when she was heavy, gotten married, gotten pregnant, had the baby, breastfed, stopped breastfeeding, gotten pregnant, had the baby, breastfed, stop breastfeeding, gotten pregnant, had a baby, and breastfed 3 times in 3 years. Other than the time that she was pregnant, she has maintained a 70-pound weight loss for almost 12 years. Thank you, Gabby.
Thank you so much. Hi, I'm Gabby. I'm a compulsive eater. Very grateful to be in recovery. I'm going to pass around my 2 good fat pictures. I have a lot more, but I thought I'd save you all of that. And then a picture, it's a little immodest, so I'm sorry if it's a little naked, of me pregnant and abstinent. And you can see what I mean when those of you who are maybe listening at some other time, I'm wearing a cut-off T-shirt, which somebody thought was a really good idea when I was pregnant. I'm not sure why. And everything is baby. It's like someone grafted a beach ball inside of my stomach and otherwise left this, unrecognizably thin person around the outside. And then the product of my labors, so to speak, my three kids, who are now 7, 6, and turning 5 in about 3 weeks. So I'm going to pass those around for those who are here. And I hope that at the end or now I'll give out my telephone number and my email address if anybody wants to talk to me later, or if you're on the listening to this at some other time. My cell phone number is 818-400-4988. Those of you who are here live, I'd be delighted to give that to you when we're not on tape. And my email address is F as in Frank, Y, Z as in Zebra, I, C, S, physics at yahoo.com. That's because I'm a teacher, and I teach physics. I bet you couldn't get that. So I'm Gabby. I'm a compulsive eater. I came into this program in 1997 by the grace of God. I got abstinent when I was first walked into these rooms, and by beautiful, beautiful, wonderful happiness, there's so many people here today who were here at my early meetings. This has been like old home week over here, and that's wonderful. And I love seeing that. But I walked into these rooms. I was close to 200 pounds, and I'm 5'2 and a half. And that's, you know, I was busting out of my size 22s. And so I got in this program. I got abstinent. I did what I was supposed to. You know, I did my 30 questions. I did my inventory. I did my steps. I did my, you know, and I hit maintenance in a year. On my 1 year birthday, I weighed in at maintenance weight. And in the meantime, I'm dating, and I started right around my 1 year birthday. I re-met the man who's my husband. He had been a friend when I was very heavy. We were not at all romantically involved. I re-met him when I got thin, and lo and behold, turns out, wasn't just the fat, of course, it was all the fat between my ears. And I got out, you know, we dated. We moved in, we got engaged, we got married, we waited a year, we got pregnant. And I called my sponsor in a panic. I had got abstinent in 1997, got married in 2000, got pregnant in 2001, maybe January of 2002. At that point, you're talking 5 years with really more or less the same food plan. Because like I said, I'm pretty short. I had the first 30-day plan, then I had the second 30-day plan. Then for about a year, I had the like slightly, tinily modified, you know, maintenance plan, and then I started gaining weight on that. So I went back to the second 30-day plan. So I was maintaining my weight on the same food plan that I had lost 70 pounds on, which not my favorite thing ever. But I got pregnant. And I, you know, it's that big conflicted mess that you start to feel. First of all, you're hormonal beyond belief. Second of all, I found out I was pregnant. We told my sister-in-law on maybe a Sunday. On Monday, they were trying to get pregnant at the same time. We wanted to have kids at the same time. They found out the next day that they were not able to have biological children together. So I stuffed all those feelings down. But I was abstinent. So what that meant is I just was trying so hard to not be pregnant, except that, of course, I was pregnant. So that's, you know, being pregnant is like the number one lesson in not being in control of your own life. I mean, you know, I'm a control addict. I would love to, you know, that line in the big book where it says, like, you know, we were the directors, and if only everybody would listen to us, you know, the play would be so much better. Turns out when you're pregnant that you have no control over anything. My first pregnancy, I was narcoleptic. If you left me in a chair for more than 5 minutes, and this is not an exaggeration, I was asleep. Everywhere. All the time. If I drove somewhere in the passenger seat, I was asleep. I mean, it was a joke. It was a terrible joke, but it was, for the first 3 months, I slept, you know, all the time. You could tell I had no other children, right? Because once you have other children, that's not an option anymore. And so I got pregnant, and I made an appointment, doctor's appointment, when I, like, it for like my 7th week. You later learn, by the way, that there's nothing, they don't even want to see you until you're about 12, 13 weeks pregnant, because, you know, what are they going to do? Nothing. They kind of look at you. They give you a stick. They say, pee on this. And I say, I peed on like 5 of them already, which is not an exaggeration. I actually did take 5 pregnancy tests. Turned out that I was pregnant. And the doctor says to me, well, we'll see you in a month. And I said, well, wait. What do I do? How do I eat? How do I, you know? And he said, yeah, you know, you'll eat when you're hungry. And I said, that's not a good plan. I said, well, but how do I know how much weight to gain? He said, come back in a month, and I'll tell you if you've gained enough or too much. And I thought, you got to be kidding. Do you know what I can gain in a month? I mean, like, easy, 30, 40 pounds. I mean, like, that's a joke, right? You know. And I called my sponsor crying, and she said, there are women who have gotten pregnant and abstinence in this program. Call them now. And so I said, okay, hi, Gabrielle, how are you? I'm Gabby, she's Gabrielle. And I said, what did you add? Now, you should understand, I'm in the second 30-day plan, and I am waiting, because my lifelong dream has been get pregnant, gain 800 pounds, right? And she says, I said, what did you add to your food plan? She said, well, turns out you're supposed to add about 300 calories when you're pregnant. She said, so I added 2 snacks. I said, snacks? I haven't had snacks in 5 years. Snacks? I don't want a snack. What's a snack? I don't know. She said, okay, this is what I did. I had a cup of milk in the morning, like around 9 or 10 in the morning, and I had half a cup of juice in the afternoon, about 3, 4 o'clock. Got to be kidding me, right? I mean, like, you're joking. Do you know what people, normal people eat? Normal people eat. My version of normal people eat that gain 800 pounds during their pregnancies. So I was like, not Gabrielle. Called Amy. Say, Amy, hi, guess what? I'm pregnant, like 5 minutes pregnant. How are you? What do I do? Amy said, well, I talked to Gabrielle when I got pregnant. crap. She said, I didn't do the liquid thing. She said, so I just ate a protein in the morning. And a fruit in the afternoon. So I'm staying on my second 30-day plan, and I get to add 2 freaking cheese sticks? I mean, that's, you're joking, right? No, turns out you're not joking. And so that's what I did, because I follow directions. I have to tell you, the first time I called my sponsor, I was incredibly nauseous. It was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. She said, okay, you talk to these ladies. You're supposed to add a fruit in the afternoon. I want you to go eat a fruit. I said, I don't want to. I haven't been to the doctor yet to confirm that I'm pregnant. I peed on 5 sticks, but you know, I wasn't really, really, really sure I was pregnant. She said, I am giving you the permission. You are sponsor-directed to do it. Even if you are not pregnant, it will not count as a slip. I cried. It was so terrifying to me that I was doing something different with my food. Later, I cry often when I have to change my food. I cried, and I ate my fruit, and the nausea went away, but the hunger didn't. And in that moment, I saw this giant pit open up in front of me, and I thought, this is why people gain 100 pounds when they're pregnant, because the nausea goes away if you eat. But the hunger doesn't. Holy cow, I'm in trouble. So that's what I did. All the whole time I was pregnant with my daughter. You can see from that picture, I gained very little weight. I thought, in the first 12 weeks, I was like, yes, that's right. My mom was like, well, go get some, you know, I'm going to come out and visit, and we'll go get some, you know, new maternity clothes. And I was like, Mom, I'm still fitting in my size 8 Calvin Kleins. The next day, I couldn't button them because God has a great sense of humor. And then, you know, you see that by the end, it was sort of like a joke. My brother, who has a PhD in neurobiology, said to me, honestly, how do you stand up without falling over? Like, honestly, you're not funny. So I give birth to the baby on a Thursday morning, very early in the morning, and I give birth to the baby, and my weigh day is Tuesday, and, you know, the first week it's so crazy, and I'm barely getting any sleep, and I don't know what I'm doing or whatever, so I forget to weigh myself that week on Tuesday. And I have a sort of rule, like, I don't usually weigh myself. If I forget on that day, I just wait a week, because I'm linear maintenance, you weigh once a week. And so a week goes by, and I weigh myself on Tuesday, and I think to myself, okay, it was 130 when I started. You were supposed to gain about 25 to 35 pounds, that's what they tell you. So I kept prepping myself the whole time I was pregnant. Okay, 25 to 35 pounds plus 130, that means that the scale is going to say 155 to 165, somewhere in there, by the time I give birth to this baby, if God has this plan along with me. And I need to be okay with that number because the weight will come off. And this was a pep talk I gave myself almost every day. The scale never hit 150. I gained 18 pounds with my first pregnancy. Stepped on the scale when a week and a half after I gave birth, I was 8 pounds down from my maintenance weight. So every time I read all those, you know, people in People magazine, I write into the magazines, yeah, well, of course Angelina Jolie looks like that after she has her babies because she has personal trainers and she has, you know, cooks and she, and I think, yeah, she ate, like, abstinent food while she, I mean, I don't know that that's true, but real people can do it too. I will say that by the second pregnancy, I was on my whole little Heidi horse, you know, it's not even going to say 150, hit 150 like, you know, 5 minutes into the pregnancy. Not really, but I did gain a lot more weight very quickly with that pregnancy. I never gained more than 25 pounds with a pregnancy, but I have to tell you, I didn't give myself that same speech every day, and ooh, when those numbers were in the high 150s, ooh, that did not look good. So I stopped weighing myself with my sponsor's express permission. I only weighed into the doctor's office. Some complications that came up. First of all, I had something called pre-partum depression. You've heard of postpartum depression. That's where women go crazy after they've given birth. It turns out that you can also have prepartum depression. I share that because I had never heard of that before. What happened was I talked to a sponsee, and I said, if I were a train, I would derail. And she said, you need to tell your sponsor what you just told me, and then you need to call your doctor. And I told my sponsor, and I was like, you know, it's morning, I'm sure I'm fine now. She said, call your doctor right now, make an appointment. Call my doctor. I said, I was sure he would say, hormones. He said, that's not normal, we're getting you to the doctor right now. Wow, okay, so it turns out, you know, even on program, even all abstinent, even everything, there are some issues happened with all three pregnancies. Another issue that came up for me, at least, was nursing. Gave birth to the baby, and I was, you know, blessed enough to be able to nurse. I hated it. I also hated being pregnant. I get to say that. I have three beautiful, wonderful children who I adore. I really, really, really was not one of these people who, like, delighted in being pregnant or giving birth or nursing. I mean, there are people who are like, I love nursing. My sister-in-law cried when she stopped nursing. I have never been so excited as when I stopped nursing because, I'd walk in, everybody would be playing with this happy baby. I'd walk in, and the baby would, like, smell me and be like, yeah, and I'm like, this is not fun. I don't want to be the chuck wagon, you know. And that was another problem that came up for me because I was up at 2 in the morning, and no one else in the house was up at 2 in the morning, and nobody else in the whole world was up at 2 in the morning, and I'm all bumming because, you know, here I am rocking this stupid baby, and I'm up at 2 in the morning, and I'm starving because it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm up, and I'm nursing. So I should eat something, don't you think? I am starving, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and I deserve it because I'm giving of myself. Yeah, and I now have like 1 minute to wrap it up. And this is my mantra, which is if you weigh less on Tuesday, you can add food to your program. I will give you a hint as to how many times that happened. 3 kids, 3 years, not once. Not even one time. So turns out that just like the exercise program, I didn't have to add a lot of food because I was, you know, by the way, I've done that with exercise too. I'm exercising now. I should add a lot of food. No. Actually, it turns out you're maintaining your weight just fine. I lived through it. I'm very, very grateful. I think that at some other point we should have a major workshop on what happens after pregnancy and lactation, because I can tell you that in other workshops what's been coming up is, okay, I have children. Let's talk about food in the house. Let's talk about food on my plate. Let's talk about how to, you know, it's maybe there's issues for, like, parents of teens and parents of young children and, you know, the parents who have the guilt about I was eating while I was there and the parents who are like, they've never seen me eat and, you know, how do I explain to them that the reason mommy doesn't eat is look at this picture. Okay, I know that you can't really see that that's me, but it really is me, but, you know, whatever. I mean, there must be 500,000 issues that come up. All I can remind you is when I started watching my children eat, I had this overwhelming fear that they were like me, and I had done this to them. You know what they say in AA? You know, if you have one parent who is an alcoholic, you have a 50% chance that the offspring will be an alcoholic, and if you have two parents who are alcoholics, we'll save you a seat. So I was like, I have done this genetically to my children, which is, you know, as yet to be proven. And my sponsor very calmly said to me, are you God? Obviously not. She said, so do you have any kind of control over, you know, how tall they are or anything? No. What color their eyes are? No. Okay, I get what you're saying. She says, you have no control over whether they're compulsive eaters or not, do you? I said, no, genetically speaking, I don't. She said, then I want you to get down and thank Hashem for giving them the opportunity to grow up in an abstinent, sober household where they can find recovery. Because they may or may not be compulsive addicts, whatever, but they're going to grow up in recovery if you stay and work this program. So by the grace of God, I had the three kids. I nursed them. I nursed them all. I nursed them all different lengths of time. I carry guilt about that, too. It can be done. Again, if you have any questions, or, I mean, now there's question papers out, or you can come up and ask them. I'm also delighted to, you know, share my experience, strength, and hope. I do have a number of sponsees who have worked, been abstinent through pregnancy. A lot of them have gone to nutritionists and done different things than what I did. They added different food or more food or whatever they did. All I can tell you is what worked for me. And amazingly, what worked for me was not feeding a football player at the same time. So thank you so much, all of you who are here live, and thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you, Gabby. Our last speaker is on the subject of diabetes. It's Sandy A. Sandy started the program in January of 2006. She recommitted in December of 2009. She's a FISM sponsor, has a number of sponsees. She's lost 40 pounds in the program and much more out of it as well. Had many service positions, and she says, the program has truly blessed me with tools for living life on life's terms and for accepting that which I cannot control. It has given me back my health and my sense of humor. For that, I am eternally indebted to CHOW. Sandy, thank you.
Thank you, Noel. It is me, too. Anyway, I'm Sandy A., and I'm a compulsive eater and a diabetic. And I thank you, everyone. I just want to qualify by saying, well, first of all, I just want to say, everyone, get up and take stretch, because you've been sitting down for a long time. Just get up and stretch, get some circulation going, you know. Okay, because you've been sitting for a long time, and, you know. Anyway, thank you for having me. I'm a little nervous about speaking on this subject, because I don't want to claim to be typical as a diabetic, and I don't want you to take my story as being typical. The most important thing you can come out of this is that you can find recovery as a diabetic, but it requires a lot of work with your sponsor and with your doctor. I really believe in that. I was diagnosed with diabetes in about 1998. I believe I was in my early 30s. And as most diabetics, when they find out, we cry, we think our life's over. That's how I felt, like my life was over, like you shut the door, like you put the coffin lid on me. I remember I was living at the time with an alcoholic boyfriend of the other program. And I'd stand there when we'd go shopping at the supermarket. I'd stand in front of the aisle of the sweet stuff, the baked goods, and I'd look at it and think, I'll never be able to have this again. I'd stand there with yearning and sadness and a lot of grief. And he stood next to me. He said, I know. As an alcoholic, he understood. And but I didn't know about this program. I had heard that there were 12-step programs for recovery, but I didn't really know 12 steps at the time. So I didn't, you know about coming in this program. And I just, the doctor put me on medication. Right when I got diagnosed, I was like, my blood sugar was about 300 something. It was over 300. So there was no question about that I was diabetic. I was peeing left and right. Well, peeing consistently. I had a constant thirst. And I was always tired. My vision, I didn't connect this, but I remember I had a hard time seeing. I had the tingles in my limbs, in the legs, in the feet, rather. And I didn't connect any of this to diabetes. What was the red flag was the peeing. I had to constantly go to the teacher next door and say, could you watch my class? I go to the bathroom. And and I always peed a lot, but it was excessive even for me. And the constant thirst, because I tried to refrain from drinking water in order to not pee. And so I knew something was up. So anyway, they put me on medication, and I was determined that I was not, at 31, going to be on medication, for crying out loud, 31, 32, I don't know. And so within a month, I got off the medication because I dropped white flour and I dropped sugar from my diet. But I didn't weigh and measure. I didn't, you know, I didn't know about any of that stuff. And so I had lost one of the symptoms also of diabetes early on when I was diagnosed was a loss of 10 pounds. So I used to be about 2-something, and I dropped down to about 197. And then I kind of stayed there. But my blood sugar was okay. My cholesterol was out of control. I didn't know those two kind of go hand in hand. And you can't see me, those of you on the tape, but those of you in the room can kind of tell I'm apple-shaped. And I carry my weight right in the center. I don't know if you can tell. I got sticky arms. They're kind of like toothpicks, and I got really toothpicky legs. But, you know, but it's all right here in the center. I had several chins before I came into the program, and I looked like Jabba the Hutt. And, you know, it wasn't attractive, but it was me. And, you know, so I was a prime candidate, you know. So I had to really be careful with the cholesterol and the sugar. But I was able to live, you know, with a modicum of good sugar control, with no sugar and controlling the white flour. On occasion, I'd still have the white flour binge. You know, I couldn't eliminate that altogether, because I still was eating certain starches. And so I still have on occasion sugar drops and sugar highs. And, you know, because I was still eating, you know, the flour. And so I was still in the food. I was in the quantity. I'm a quantity eater. That's my disease. And I'm an obsessive thinker. Anyway, I had kind of, you know, lived that way on and for a good time, with occasional binges of flour and sugar, but most of the time staying away from the sugar. And then somebody told me about this program, because what happened was I got into another 12-step program as a result of the alcoholic relationship, and I wanted to do better about my health. I knew that the 12 steps was a good way to do it, and I knew there was another 12-step program out there that dealt with food. I went into that one. Had very limited success in that one. And now I know why, because I needed this one. And, you know, a compulsive eater of my type needs this one. There's many types of compulsive eaters, but the compulsive eater of my type required this structure. But anyway, I went into that program, had very limited success, left. But then someone in this program and my other program, who was a dual person, this one and the other one, told me, oh, honey, oh, sugar. Well, she didn't say sugar. She said, oh, sweetie. She said, you just stop eating sugar and all flour, all grain. No sugar, no grain. For 30 days and 3 meals with nothing in between. And then we'll talk about going to meetings. So I said, aren't there any meetings in the literature? Oh, sure. We'll get to that in a minute. You just do that. And so I didn't see her regularly at meetings, but I started doing that. No grain, no sugar. And I was a label reader because of diabetes, so I knew if there was grain and stuff. And I did that, and I dropped 40 pounds. I hit a plateau because, of course, I was having in the meals. You know, she didn't quantify what the meals were. So the meals could be a few servings of something. So, but, you know, just no sugar and no grain, I was able to drop 40 pounds, and I hit a plateau. And then she moved. I kept asking, where's so-and-so? Where's so-and-so? And she moved. So I didn't know where meetings were. I didn't know about weighing and measuring. I didn't know about literature. I didn't know about the rest of the program. She left me. So I started adding some of the grains back in. And I kind of maintained that 40-pound weight loss. And I was okay. My cholesterol was still high. But I wasn't, I was at a weight that wasn't ideal, but it was okay. I could live with it, you know. And I didn't know what to do. And my sponsor in my other program had told me, don't do another food program. Don't do another 12-step until you finish the 9-step in ARS. So I said, okay. But then around Halloween-ish time, the binging started. And the binging wasn't just quantities. It was sugar and flour, too. I was having spikes. I was having sugar spikes in my blood reads. And I had already stopped avoiding blood reads. You know, I had a glucometer and I had lost it. I wasn't about to do that. And I knew I was in trouble because I was afraid to go to the doctor. You know, I was afraid to get my AC1, my blood work done. I was afraid. Because the AC1 tells you over a 3-month period what your blood read was like. So I knew that would be telling. I could eat a piece of you know what and jump up and down for a few minutes, and I might get away with that for a little bit, but I can't get away with that forever. And I was in a lot of pain emotionally over the binging, and it was starting to affect my sharing in the other program. And in the other program, they're really strict. You don't share about anything but our issues. That's it. And so my sponsor in the other program said, you got to start doing a food program. You got to start addressing this now. It's affecting your spiritual growth. I was on an upward incline, and then I started to plateau, and I started to even decline. And so she said not to go into the sister program, you know, the one that's like ours, that one that preceded ours. She said, don't do that food program. I want you to go into Hal. I was like, Hal? I'd heard people talk about Hal in the other rooms, you know. Hal, how am I going to do that? And she said, well, why don't you talk to so-and-so? She belongs to Hal. And so-and-so said to me, you know, Sandy, no one does it perfectly. And I came into Hal, and I thought, there's no way I can do this. I'm taking this to my doctor. So I took it to my doctor, and she said it was okay. She said, there was no problem. I kept thinking, surely somebody as big as me can't eat this and be okay, especially during that 1 week. Okay, I know there's men here, but there's a certain week where I need more fat, and I need more protein. You know, there's a week. Anyway, but you know, sometimes a week would turn to 2 weeks. And, you know, and she's going to say, you know, you're a diabetic, you don't have to eat, you know, you can add more food. And she said, no, this is looks good. She looked at it, sure, signed off on it. Okay, so I got the food plan, and I did, I tell you, the first 30 days I had to write out drops. I didn't do it typical. I'm not recommending that to anyone who's diabetic, writing out the drops. It's what worked for me. I white-knuckled through the drops because I wasn't going to pick up anything that wasn't on the food plan. I wasn't going to have snacks. And after the first 30 days, I really didn't have too many drops. On occasion, I would. I got very, very thin in program. Well, I say very thin. I got down to 109, which is a little under goal for me, under my target range for me. And but I was loving it. But one of the things is I had to watch. I had to be very regimented with my food. I had to eat at a certain hour the first year because otherwise I'd get the shakes. I did. And so that's why I'm telling people who are diabetics, really speak to your doctor and let them know that during the first 30 days, you're going to drop a lot of weight and your blood sugar level is going to change. Can we meet more than once a month? Thus, they'll tell you, see you in a month. In a month, it might be too late. You might pass out from, and I've seen it happen in program where someone came, you know, had to have their medicine adjusted like immediately. You can't be waiting sometimes a month. And you've got to insist because the doctors don't think about that. They have about a nanosecond of nutrition, and we think they're the gods of nutrition, and they really don't understand. You're the diabetic. You be on your phone with your doctor. You insist that you have to see them in 2 weeks, not a month, maybe even a week. And if you're feeling the shakes and you're not feeling good, see if you can ask other diabetics. Start making those outreach calls to other diabetics. I had to drink a lot of soda during that first 30 days. And then during that first year, I had to drink a lot of soda. And I had to eat a lot of raw vegetables in order to fill me up, to fill fiber. The raw vegetables, certain vegetables are sweeter, have more glucose density. And I was able to do that. And that kept me going. But I tell you, every diabetic's different. I'm atypical in some ways because I was only on medication 1 month. I kind of self-regulated. But there are some of you who really have real problems. You've got to talk to your doctor, and you've got to be, proactive with your doctor. Don't just sit back and let them tell you, because a lot of them don't really know they don't know compulsive eating, and some of them don't really understand diabetes either. So you really got to have a lot of dialogue, and a lot of dialogue with other people in the program, what they're doing, what they're eating, you know, because I've seen it happen where the doctor will tell you, oh, just eat white bread. They'll tell you, the sponsor, oh, just eat white bread, but before adjusting the medication. See if you can't say, can I adjust the medication first? Can we lower the doses first before you add on food or adjust my food planner? You know, have dialogue with your doctor. And I was lucky. I was ignorant. I didn't know to adjust my food. I just came in and did the program the way I did. It worked for me after a year. I rarely have drops. But I make sure I don't let meals go on. I don't let spaces between meals go on. I don't do that. Because if I get the shakes, I'm responsible. I did that. I can't give myself a reason to go out and grab the orange juice. I just don't allow that. And unfortunately now I no longer have the problem of being too tiny. The good Lord has seen to fix that little prideful element of me, and I've put on some weight, and I've had to readjust my food. And this is the thing is, a diabetic, as well as anyone else, has to be diligent about food and keep readjusting food. Even on maintenance, someone can gain weight. I did on maintenance. I gained weight weighing and measuring because I have sensitivity to certain foods. Certain foods are a little too starchy for me, you know, and I can't eat them every day. They're on the food plan. Yummy, yummy. But and some foods I have to measure, cup, and some foods I have to weigh. I mean, some foods I can weigh. I can weigh celery and eat that and be fine, 8 ounces. But I can't weigh carrots. I got to cup those because that will affect my sugar level. And I don't eat fruit at night because if I'm going to go to bed, I'm going to be inactive after eating something sugary. I'm going to mess up my sugar levels. So I eat the fruit only in the morning. And grains, I can't do grain anymore. So, you know, I mean, everyone's different. Have a lot of dialogue with the doctor, a lot of dialogue with other people. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy. Thanks to each and every one of the panelists. Now, we have some time for questions. Actually, we have as much time as you like because there's nothing going on until 7 o'clock when we eat. But if anyone's written any questions, I'll go around and pick them up. If not, the microphone, which stretches all the way out here, can be used and picked up for anybody who wants to speak. The only thing we ask is because this is being recorded, if you do want to speak into the microphone, just write your name in, giving us permission to record it so that somebody else can benefit from your experience, strength, and hope, and the dialogue here. So thank you, and if there's any questions anybody has, the microphone is open. I'll leave it right over here, and I'll go around and see if there's any questions on paper. Thank you. If anybody wants to share also, if anybody at all wants to share on any of these subject matters or anything related.
I think we inspired the masses.
Mm-hmm. All right, this question probably was inspired by Claudie Scher. It's the one that caused me to grimace in horror during her comment and mime committing myself suicide if I had to do that. Without having coffee and you are so tired, what do you do? Anybody can speak to this that doesn't drink coffee.
Hi, I'm Claudia, compulsive eater.
Hi, Claudia.
This is what's really, really helped me. Believe it or not, it's actually for me it was a detox. But when I'm really, really tired, I exercise. I salsa dance. I walk every morning for about 45 minutes. And that has helped. I don't need that extra caffeine. You know, caffeine does, it gives you a little rush, and then boom, you're tired again. So that's what I do. The E word, you know, there was a workshop this morning, and you know, if I'm really, really tired, I take a nap. So, thank you.
Hi, this is Gabby. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Gabby.
I also am off all artificial sweeteners and gum and things like that. And it was not because I'm fabulous and I think that, you know, this is a cleaner, better way to run my program. It's because I abuse it. I didn't use it, then I started to use it a little, then I started to use it a little more, and then it became a problem, but I wasn't willing to give it up. And finally, it became a problem that, I was willing to give up. Because when you're inhaling roughly 50 packets of artificial sweetener a day, you start to face the concept that perhaps you're not, you know, living your fullest life. And so I want to say also that, you know, I said to my sponsor ages ago, well, but what happens if I get so tired? And she said, well, then you sleep. And the miracle is that I really had not considered that. I will say that off the caffeine, I tend not to have the high highs, so that means I don't have the low lows. It kind of evens me out a little bit. I will tell you, you know that commercial where they say it's Claritin clear, and they like pull back the haze, and that's actually what I felt like about 4 or 5 days after I got off all the artificial sweeteners. I really felt like colors were brighter, smells were, you know, sharper. My outlook upon, it just seemed like I could think better. I didn't feel quite as in a haze. And I wasn't even doing that much caffeine. I tended to do decaffeinated stuff because I was drinking so many of them and so much of them. There are definitely moments where I sort of think, oh, if only. But for me, it's a question of I want it because I think if I can just obsess about the caffeine or the sweetener or whatever, then I'll have less to obsess about. Like, it'll take the place of whatever it is that I'm obsessing about now. Like, if I could just have that fix, or I could just worry about where to get that next fix, that then I would be soothed of whatever it is I'm thinking about. And when I think that, all I have to remember is that I'm really, really good at multitasking. So at the same time that I am worrying about where the next Starbucks is, or what, how long I can wait and how many packets I'm eating and what I'm doing, I can simultaneously, turns out, also obsess about everything else that's going on in my life. So just because I'm adding a new obsession will not, it, you know, this is not a whack-a-mole game. The other one doesn't go away. I just have more moles popping up. And so I do have to say that for me, the last time I had artificial sweetener was on my honeymoon cruise. That was 2001. It's, you know, there are moments where that I think that today would be the last day that I'm going to try that experiment. But again, it's, you know, sometimes it's, you know, a minute at a time, and sometimes it's months at a time. So let me just say that too, that happens also.
The next question is, how do you sweeten your life and your food without sweeteners? Is there anybody that...
Have you hit a nerve?
Hi, I'm quite a compulsive eater.
Hi, Claudia.
You know what? Actually, you learn to taste the actual taste of the food. It's sweet naturally, and you enjoy it. You enjoy it. You know, you accept that part. You don't use it as a crutch. And I have to make it sweet. Just to mention, you know, food, I mean, a fruit, orange. You know, it's sweet. You adapt to it, you accept it, and things taste wonderful. You actually enjoy its natural state. I hope that helps. Thank you.
Yeah, this one is actually a really good one for me because I struggle with... addiction to, well, no, I shouldn't say addiction. I'm compulsive about sweetener. And I try to get off, and then I take it back, and then I go back and forth with the sweetener. I've actually reduced a lot of my sweetener intake. It's not totally gone. But, I've really, really, really reduced it. And one of the hardest times to reduce was in the morning, right? That was when I needed it the most, because that was when I was most likely to oversweeten. And, so what I had to do was, I had to ask for willingness. Once God gives you the willingness, and God gives it, okay, I can't talk myself into it. The worst thing I could do is pretend that I can talk and rationalize. I can't rationalize anything. I have to ask God, give me the willingness. And once God gave me the willingness, it wasn't so hard to accept the food the way it was. But what I did was I cooked my fruit before I stick it into the oat bran. And that was sweet enough. I have in the big crock pot, it comes with a little tiny crock pot. So I put it there overnight, and it gets nice and stewy and whatever, and I put that into the, and that was the biggest challenge was the oat bran for me. I'm talking a lot about food, so specifically that was the one I couldn't eat it without the sweetener. I gave up the sweetened drink, the drink that I had to add sweetener to. I kind of gave that up. I don't drink that anymore. I do drink the one that's already pre-sweetened, but I'm taking baby steps. As long as I'm not adding sweetener, I'm going to allow myself that pre-sweetened drink until I'm ready to give that one up too, until God gives me the willingness. I take baby steps. I never give up more than one thing at a time. you know, because I remember one time, my first 30 days or something, my first year, I wanted to go vegan. I thought, oh, I'm Miss Health, I want to go vegan, you know. And I called the vegan gal in program, who's not here today, and I asked her, you know, well, how did you go vegetarian, blah, blah, and she said, why do you want, she was investigating, why do you want to do this, why do you, blah, blah, blah. She goes, I've been like this since I was 15, Sandy. She said, give yourself a year of abstinence, of good, clean abstinence, before you start making all these changes. Don't make too many changes, you'll give yourself a reason to go out. She said, do not give yourself a reason to go out. So talk to your sponsor about making changes with the sweetener. Okay, baby steps.
With that, I think we're being evicted, but thank you very much. This has been a wonderful panel. Thank you all, each and one of you. Okay. We all join together and do this serenity prayer.
For the workshop, please leave ASAP. I love you all, but we got to start the rehearsal for the fashion show. So if you could take your conversations outside, we would be humbly, humbly, humbly grateful. So only if you're in the fashion show, come on up front, sit down. Jim, we're going to need you up front. And are you Susan?
Hi. I brought a dress. I'm wearing a dress, but for rehearsal, I'm in jeans. Don't be nervous.
How are you?
Wonderful.
Oh, we did it. We're here.
Okay. I just want to plug in and make sure. It's not the projector. Karen has a projector.
Okay.
Who is Karen?
So Karen is outside. She's in the like peach color.
Okay.
You know, what I'm thinking, Susan, maybe we'll just, this is Jim.
Hello.
Susan's done the PowerPoint presentation for all of these four pictures.
Okay, so you have the same order I do here?
I don't know.
She has the order. It's already on her PowerPoint.
But I'm probably going to have to add, like, Patricia's last initial.
C. All right, guys, so if you would line up in this order. All right, so unfortunately, we won't be able to practice on the stage because they haven't set it up yet. And since it's early, what we're going to do is just go over the order. Jim.
Thank you.
Jim is going to be our wonderful MC.
Yay.
Give him a hand.
Yay.
Oh,
so Norma is number one. Okay, Norma, why don't you just come on up here in this order. Suzanne Kay, I think she went to the bathroom. She's going to be number two. Beverly S. Diana, why don't you go on over here. You'll be in seat number three, Beverly. Sheila, I think she's going to be here late. She's number four. Mary Kay is number five. Oh, she's getting her hair done. Okay. Jill, you're number six. So one, two, three, four, yeah. Six. Should we go? Gladys R. Okay, wonderful. You're going to be number seven. Or Gladys. Gladys, what's your last name, honey? Okay, sorry about that. All right, Diana C. is number eight. Beatrice, number nine. Suzanne, come on up here. You're going to be number two. Ah, what beautiful women. Kathy H. is number 10. Yeah, why don't you do Patricia C. Your last name is H. Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, if I say your name wrong, tell us now. No, it matters. It matters. Okay, Patricia C. is 11. Naha is... tell me, how do you say it?
Nacha.
Okay, very good. Barb... okay. Barbara B, 13. Okay, and Jean is number 14. Hey, we have one guy. Sorry, Jean. We had two, but the other one couldn't make it. That's right, the best for last. Now, the other people in here, Chris, raise your hand. Chris is going to be doing makeup. And tell me, Karen, you're going to be doing makeup and hair? Makeup. Okay, Karen.
Katrina's
going to
do hair, and I'm calling her because she's finishing barber.
Oh, okay, thank you. And tell me your names. Oh, they're friends. Do you want to do makeup? We need you. Okay, they're not here. There's some other people who might be coming to do hair and makeup. I hope so. So let me just, I'm Judy. It's so nice to meet all of you after talking to you on the phone. What we're going to do, Karen was supposed to tell me, I think the runway, Chris, can you...